Good morning, everybody. I hope you had a good evening yesterday. The reception was good and the weather was excellent. So I hope you had an excellent time and the weather is going to be better today. And it's Friday, so that's another saving grace. But that let me not say too many nice things about the weather, then you won't be here. You will probably be outside. So I don't want to happen to. So this is, I have a few announcements to make. First, as you all know, there are three tracks going on. This is the second track. This is the general technology track. If that's what you were going to be in, this is where you have to be. Then there is a policy track. And today, instead of the advanced technology, we have a user experience track. Okay, so the third track is the varying one. Yesterday was advanced technology, today is user experience. And other announcements, we have a first break at 10:30 and lunch at 12:30 in the exhibit area. Seating, as usual, like yesterday, you can sit anywhere you want. Wi-Fi, if you haven't already gotten onto it, is still available, and the details for that is on page 5, I believe, right? So that's still available. Validation, parking validation, again, I'm saying that in the morning, but again, in the evening, I'll mention that parking tickets can be validated for those who drove in here. Then the slides and the audio are being posted. So you won't have video, and but you're having an audio session. We're just doing rudimentary, and just capture it. And this is the raw ones. It's not going to be made better, or even if I say you know many times, it's still going to have you knows many times there. So it's going to be a raw raw audio that is going to be posted. Logon information again on page 5. This afternoon, the conference ends this afternoon, as you know, and there is a summary panel. Please do come. And there is, we are hoping that you will give us feedbacks, and it will be an interactive session, right? The talking of feedback, today at 3 o'clock, you will receive an email with the feedback form. So it's very important. I know it's painful. Even I get a lot of feedback, which I ignore, especially from the hotels that I stayed in. But this is a one-year event, and the feedback that you give us really helps us do things differently or better next time, right? So please take a few minutes to fill those in a survey, and you don't have to do it at 4 o'clock today. There's no time limit, but do it within a week or so that we can gather that. And that gives me a segue to the next ICMC. As you know, it's in May next year. So this is going to be early because there are very few months left. We have already put out the call for abstracts, right? So that's in on December 15th. So if you want to participate and let your ideas and unique ways of doing things be shared, you want to talk about it next year, you have to submit an abstract. And the abstract is not a whole paper, it's not the slides, it's a very short summary of what you plan to do. And the idea right now is still to have those four tracks, right? Policy, general, and then one day of advanced, and one day of user experience. Of course, it may change a little bit based on your survey results, right? What you felt this time, it may change, but that's what we're planning on right now. Any other questions that you may have, please stop by at the registration desk. They're there to help you out. Thank you very much. That's a long list of to-do list that I got from Bill. So we are going to welcome Leidos today as a morning first session. And the topic is repetition count test. It's by Jason Tseng. He's a project control analyst at Leidos, and Michael Powers, who is security assurance engineer at Leidos. So they're going to talk about the benefits for the vendors, as well as FIPS 140-2 requirements behind the CRNGT for the NIST Special Pub 800-90A. So welcome, and thank you.
Thanks for the intro, Ithia. I think Nithia pretty much summed it up today. We're going to talk about maybe not only the repetition count test, but just about CRNGTs in general. The talk has evolved a little bit over the past few months due to some of the guidance that we got from the CMVP. So this talk has changed a little bit from what we originally envisioned it to be. But hopefully it sounds all coherent to you guys from here on. So just a few introductions. And Nithya already said it. My name is Jason Tseng. I'm currently the lab manager for the Leidos CSTL, responsible for all FIPS 140-2 and TWIC validations. And just a little background, back in 2011, got a computer engineering BS from the University of Maryland College Park.
And I'm Mike Powers, security assurance engineer at Leidos. I also do FIPS 140, FIPS 201, and SCAP related activities. My previous experience is in like reverse engineering, penetration testing, product development, and I've got a BS in math, minor in computer science from 2012. And I guess to start off, we're gonna just go over the general the purpose of continuous testing on random number generators with FIPS 140-2 and kind of what the goals are with continuous testing. So right now there's basically there's CRNGTs, there's the potential for the RCTs, there's also health tests. The purpose of these are to, in the case of a CRNGT or RCT, the purpose is to detect flatlining, which would just be like an RNG basically repeating the same sequences over and over again. They're also, in the case of like the health test for the DRBGs, it would be intended to detect internal errors such as memory depletion or buffer overflows that would otherwise cause the RNG mechanisms to malfunction. And for the RCTs, the last bullet there is basically you're detecting that the RNG does not appear to be providing as much entropy as you've estimated to provide. So maybe you're expecting your RNG to produce 7.8 bits of entropy per byte, but your continuous testing is revealing that it's repeating sequences a lot and it's acting more like an entropy source that would only provide 1 bit per byte. So that's kind of the general overview. Current state is there's a continuous random number generator test, and that's pretty simple. It's just you store off the first block of data that's produced by the RNG, and then for subsequent blocks produced, you're comparing the block to the previous one, and if they match, then you have to enter an error state. Otherwise, you continue normal operation. I've got, a couple pros and cons about CRNGTs. Pros, they're minimal overhead. Like, there's just one memory comparison and one memory copy, and they can detect very specific forms of catastrophic failures, and that would be the flatlining RNG. Cons here, depending on your implementation of the error state, it could introduce bias into the RNG, meaning that like each block, you have the property that you're never gonna have two blocks come out of the RNG that are the same because it would fail the CRNGT otherwise. Jason's going to go into a little more detail on that later, though. Other cons are that it doesn't really have statistical significance since it's kind of based on the block size of the RNG. So, like, for a 16-bit RNG, there's a much higher chance that just randomly two blocks are going to be the same, while if you have something that produces, like, 256-bit blocks, it'd be much more unlikely for that to happen. Third bullet, it doesn't really make much sense when you're applying it to a pseudo-random number generator, as you can design your pseudo-random number generator to just never output two consecutive blocks, like internally. For example, AES and CTR mode won't ever repeat a block. It couldn't detect errors that are like every other block repeating or every third block repeating, and blast cases, it can't really detect patterns that are smaller or larger than the RNG's block size. And I gave the example there that if the block size was 16 bits, a 3-bit pattern of repeating 101 would never be detected by the CRNGT.
So what does the 5140 standard say about how you should treat a CRNGT failure or any other conditional self-test? So quoting from the standard, says that the module should, if it should fail the self-test, it should enter an error state and then output an error indicator via the status output interface. It should not perform any cryptographic operations while in the error state, and the data output interface should be inhibited when the error state occurs. Okay, it's pretty easy. And so going off of that, traditionally in the past from our vendors at least, we've seen that they take traditionally two different pretty logical approaches. You either, when the CRNGT fails, you discard the failing block that was causing the CRNGT to fail, and then you output some sort of error indicator indicating that something failed, and then otherwise you just go back into normal operation. The other case is that we often see that if the CRNGT fails, the module outputs an error indicator, and then it just proceeds to terminate execution. And both of these cases are totally valid cases, and it passes what it says in the standard. The only problem with that is that you end up effectively throwing away bits. And that kind of goes back to what Mike was saying in the previous slide about how when you throw away the bits, then you're always guaranteed the condition that, you know, A is not equal to B, B is not equal to C, and so on. So due to this and from comments from some of our vendors, we decided to reach out to the CMVP for a little bit of clarification on what are some alternatives that we might be able to do in order to handle those cases. And so we found out that we are not required to actually throw away any bits. And if you read the standard, that does totally make sense. It doesn't actually say that you don't have to throw away any bits. It was just... I guess something ingrained into all of the labs and vendors' minds that logically you come to the decision that if something causes it to fail, then you throw it away. But I guess that's not something that we realized was actually required. So from what the CMVP said, they said that you can enter the error state and then inhibit all the data output via the data output interface. Then you can just exit the error state and do pretty much nothing. So the key point is the module is not required to throw away any bits that cause the test to fail. So based off of this seems to indicate that a valid error state could be something like the following, where you have a theoretical function CRNGT error state, and what it would do is you would inhibit the data output interface. You would perform some kind of error state operation that could be, I don't know, logging the failure via the status output interface. You could set a flag to determine the program's future behavior, or you could just do nothing. And then after that, you would uninhibit the data output interface and exit the error state, and then optionally, you could return the block of data that caused the test to fail. So, as Mike was saying, we don't really want that condition of the block 1 is not equal to block 2, 2 is not equal to 3. To occur. So one of the things that we would recommend is that you just don't discard the blocks as a result of a failed CRNGT. So one thing that you do is that could affect the amount of entropy that comes out of your ND or NG. So one alternative would be to just simply not count that failing block as part of your entropy count. So for example, if your DRNG normally produces 64 bits of full entropy per block, and you need 256 bits of entropy to properly seed your DRBG, you would normally need 4 blocks of output from the NDRNG in order to fulfill this. But if the CRNGT were to fail, one of the things that we recommend is that you just produce 5 blocks instead of output from the NDRNG to seed your DRBG.
Now move on to the actual description of the repetition count test and draft implementation guidance 9.8. So with draft implementation guidance 9.8, they're adding this repetition count test. It's very similar to the CRNGT. The general gist is this time you're storing off the first block produced by the RNG, and you're setting this time you're maintaining a counter value. And basically once you have enough repeats of that block, the RCT fails. So you choose basically a couple of parameters to set that, to determine what your cutoff value is, which I'll go over in the next slides. But it's basically a CRNGT, except instead of after just two repeats, it could be after like N number of repeats, the RCT fails. And I guess another note about the RCT is that it also appears in the SP890B standard for, I guess, the tests that are supposed to be run on the entropy sources as well. So there are basically three major parameters with the repetition count test. First one is the desired false positive rate W, which the recommendation here from NIST is 2^-30, which would be basically 1 in a billion false positive rate. You also need to determine your entropy requirements. So if you have, you know, a NDRNG that you're expecting to provide 64 bits of entropy per block, then you would set your H value to 64. And then from those values, you can calculate C using that equation there. In this particular case, it ended up that C comes out to a value of 1.46, and then you round up, which will give you a cutoff value of C equals 2. So you can note in this case, C equals 2 is equivalent to a CRNGT in that after two repeated blocks, the RCT will fail. And the benefits of the RCT in this case, if you compare it to the CRNGT, is the RCT actually has some statistical significance, as you're trying to, it's based on confirming a entropy estimate H. So as you saw in the previous slide, we were trying to kind of verify that the RNG was acting in a fashion that it would produce 64 bits per block of entropy. I have a kind of a caveat here though, that since you are rounding, it's not always the case that it's like, you know, on point. It's like in the example I provided there, like you would be basically calculating a cutoff value of 1.01 while you round up to 2, which is kind of quite a bit higher. And I have the second bullet there. In some cases where C is greater than 2, the RCT will reduce the chances of unintentionally introducing bias or unintentionally failing during operation. Because in those cases, like for example, going back to the 16-bit block RNG, just by random chance, there's like a 1 in 65,000 chance that two blocks, two subsequent blocks will be equal. But in this case, you can increase the cutoff value. So you could, you know, it might be 3 or 4 or 5 blocks before you actually call it a failure. And with IG9.8, there are also a couple of other changes potentially. And that is, for the SP890A DRBGs, they're actually proposing to remove all CRNGT and RCT requirements as they are. This is due to the fact that the SP890A DRBGs already have extensive health testing built into them that would otherwise detect the catastrophic errors. And just a note that this kind of goes back to the point I made earlier, that the CRNGT and the RCT didn't really make that much sense when applied to a pseudo-random number generator, as you could just design the random number generator in a fashion that it won't repeat. All right.
So impacts and looking forward. So retroactive impacts of the RCT. The RCT doesn't appear to have any retroactive impact on the current modules. When you calculate the cutoff point, and if it's equal to 2, the RCT is basically equivalent to a CRNGT. So current implementations of CRNGTs wouldn't need modification anyways. You would just say that you do an RCT that where C equals 2, and you have a RCT as well. CRNGTs are just a subset of the RCTs, and they'll always be either equally as stringent or more stringent than the RCT. And then regardless of whether a CRNGT can be classified as a subset of RCTs, the current draft implementation of 9.8 allows for either CRNGT or the RCT to be implemented. some difficulties for NIST. Continuous testing on entropy sources, in particular, can be next impossible to do effectively. For example, detecting that a proprietary and not publicly documented hardware entropy source that's providing adequate entropy is hard to prove. If it's performing its own conditioning, it could end up removing the bias and other indicators from its output, such that no type of entropy testing would be able to be effective at detecting that. There's also the potential for a malicious entropy source that produces seemingly random data, but it's really never actually fully deterministic or predictable, such as the dual ECD RBG. With elevated access, even software sources like DevRandom could be replaced or manipulated as well. And also, just creating a generic test that can be applied to all RNGs is a difficult task as well. Current tests, such as the CRNGT and the RCT, they're based on the block size of the RNG, and there could be cases like hardware RNGs that may produce 256 bit blocks, but due to the nature of the hardware RNG, a failure may manifest itself as a repeating 7-bit pattern. So is there hope for a brighter future? We think so. ISO IEC 19790 2012 publication doesn't actually mandate any continuous testing for RNGs. And the standard is set to become the next version of FIPS 140. And last we heard, public commenting period ended on September 28th, 2015, but there's still no ETA on when this ISO standard will become official.
And I guess we have a couple of recommendations for vendors as we finish off here. For now, we're recommending against implementing the RCT unless you have a compelling reason to. A compelling reason might be if you have an RNG that has a very small block size, like 16 bits, that would otherwise end up triggering many false positives with the traditional CRNGT. And second recommendation is also if you don't like the traditional error state behavior for CRNGTs and RCTs, which ends up effectively discarding repeated blocks, that you should just modify your error behavior such that blocks are no longer being discarded.
So I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet here, because this sounded like my comments to SP800-90B and C in the last go around. But the CRNGT is not in the same place as the RCT, in the sense that it's FIPS 140, and it says on the output of the RNG. And so I've built myself an SP800-90 thing. I am either looking at the output of an XOR construction or oversampling construction, ENRBG, or I'm looking at the output of a DRBG. So the CRNGT is it's in the wrong place. You said it doesn't make much sense to look at the output of a DRBG, but that's exactly what you're looking at. I've been told by people that really I should be applying it to the output of the entropy source as well, but our entropy source output is serial, so that doesn't work either. So I think the CRNGT, aside from being just wrong, is in the wrong place to even be in a. If it was actually on the output of a greater than 16-bit wide, greater than 15-bit wide entropy source, it wouldn't do that much harm. You've lost a bit of entropy, but you're going into the conditioner, and you'll get by. But when you're required to put it on the output of a DRBG, it's neither necessary nor sufficient, but you do have to have logic integrity testing for the DRBG, which will confirm, do a better job than the CRNGT anyway. Now, our problem with error signaling is it's an oracle. If you have a general purpose RNG that's a shared service to multiple entities on a chip or in a server or in a service, and that's usually what you've got because it's a physical instance, it has to be, then what does the error state mean? If I've got a series of bits, it's a series of numbers, A, B, C, D, and A's going over here, and B's going over here, and D's going over here, and I've got an error state that's telling me about a pair of values and their relationship, that's meaningless to the individual consumers. So the idea that there's this single consumer is just wrong, and then for the idea of an error state that crosses the boundary of multiple, of, you know, two in this case, values is wrong, it needs to go away.
We totally agree that, I mean, it doesn't make too much sense to have an error state, like, and as we said, the one example is that you could basically just do nothing. It's kind of like a Band-Aid for something that's currently in the standard that we can't change at this point.
Actually, the way to think about the RCT test is the health test for a true random number generator. And so, when you have something like that, you always have to worry about whether it performs correctly, because these things are hopefully non-deterministic, right? They're true random number generators, and they can deviate from our expectation at any time. That's really the element of randomness. So you need to have some ways of assessing how close you are to the initial assumptions of the behavior that this thing should exhibit. And that's the approach we have taken. We have taken one of the proposed health tests in 90B, which we thought is simpler to map to the behavior of the very simplistic and admittedly not perfect CRNG test, and advocate that should be applied to the non-deterministic random number generator. The other, that is the deterministic random number generator, we think that if you pass the set of health tests that are prescribed in 90A, there is not much need to worry about. It's a deterministic algorithm. If the integrity test is correct and if this health testing is correct, I mean, you're basically wasting cycles at that point checking the output from the deterministic random number generator. And so one other final note I'd like to make is that we're sort of making a consistent effort throughout NIST and Computer Security Division to improve the openness and transparency of our standard. And if you see in the draft 9.8 version that we put out, my colleague, actually, Alan Roginski, presented a very elegant proof on the properties of the repetition count test in order to make sure that when we propose something, it is scientifically sound.
One part what I did, I explained the formula in 90B in a sense that explains the relationship to the entropy. It shows the sensitivity of the test to the entropy. If there is less entropy, you expect more repetitions, right? There is less variability. And the formula, which was already put in 90B, makes perfect sense, and the number C reflects the correspondence between the entropy, the false positive probability, and the the repetition test. So basically, not much. The other thing I did, I showed that by in case of the non-deterministic random number generator, there is no standard yet. It's only a draft. So how to pass the standard required, the FIPS 140-2 requirements, I showed that even if the repetition count test shows C greater than 2, which differs from FIPS 140-2, you can basically, for the purposes of the validation, put a box around this NDRBG and show that this box does satisfy exactly the FIPS 140-2 requirement, which means that, and because it's there is no standard yet for the NDRBG that everybody has to comply with, you can say, well, that's your random number generator. And then you perfectly map it into our standard. You know, one way to map it is, of course, to get an alpha small enough so C is equal to, well, the exponent and the alpha small enough, the alpha large enough, so that the value of C is equal to 2, as the speakers said, that's exactly the same test. But also, if you don't want to do it for your own testing purposes, just to comply with the standard, you can say, for the compliance purposes, this is my random number generator. That's all. And certainly, everybody is welcome to talk to me during the break about the details of the proof.
Where is it published? Your writing?
It's not published. It's not published.
There's
not It's really, it's not worth the publication. It's just basically an insight into the formula that is already in 90B. It proves that the formula does reflect the relationship between the repetition count number C, the entropy, and the false positive probability properly. The formula itself is rather obscure. The explanation or the proof shows exactly why it works together. And the other part, that how you put a box, is also not published. But I think it's less important because it's purely a validation trick. But the formula and the proof that it all works together, yes, it was distributed.
So a couple slides ago, you guys had two statements which seemed very strong. I think they're probably okay in the realm of the test you're talking about, specifically that it was impossible to detect either malfeasance in a random number generator or entropy source, or that it was impossible to detect errors. And you know, obviously that's not true if you run enough numbers through that you get the right statistical properties and you look at all of the repeat counts and all of the very detailed tests you can do. So my question was, have there been any tests, intermediate tests developed that are somewhere between the very simplistic repetition count tests and the massive amount of tests you do to validate an entropy source that would give us a higher level of confidence that there's neither malfeasance nor error in the entropy source?
I know that, I don't know all of the tests, but I know in SP890B specifically on entropy sources, there are quite a few tests outlined in there. I think the adaptive proportion test is still relatively simplistic, but there are other ones like you could keep a running estimate of the min entropy or something mm-hmm. of the output, or maybe attempt compressing the data. But then again, once you get into those, you're kind of adding a lot of overhead. It won't just be simple memory comparisons at that point.
So our manufacturing test people have the same problem. They want to be able to run tests and say this output is random, but they can go on the big test and run the small test in the hardware. What's the point? So there wants to be between what I developed and the using deployment for our binomial feedback test. It takes lots of data which are relevant to the size of your test of memory, and then working out if the frequency of the piece within the block, collisions within the block, meets the expected by number of maps. And that gives you a reasonable key value of using small block of data as opposed to manufacturing. But that, I would pass it exactly as something you
something in between.
Rigorous.
Did you publish that, or is that proprietary for Intel?
I could. It's just a three-page document.
Yeah, I'm in a slightly worse case because presumably your testers trust you. I got a card. I got a card given to me by a manufacturer, and I'm like, Thanks.
Any other questions? Anyone have a
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Michael. It was a nice presentation.